Well, it's hard to make sense, I think you'd agree, of the many twists and turns in events surrounding Saudi Arabia this week. Key Lebanese power brokers are accusing the Saudis this morning of declaring war on Lebanon. There's some confusion over the exact status of its PM, Saad Hariri. We've had the arrest now of 210 Saudi princes and businessmen over the last week by a new corruption body. And the Iran-backed Houthi rebels fired a ballistic missile at the Saudi capital, Riyadh, though it was intercepted by the Saudis. Meanwhile, Saudi Arabia, the United Arab Emirates and Kuwait have urged their citizens in Lebanon to leave as soon as they can. And they're advising others not to travel there. All Sunni Muslim states, whereas the Shia-based Hezbollah wields a great deal of power in Lebanon, and of course Iran is Shia. So, what can be discerned from all of these developments? Cameron Bokhari is joining me now, who writes frequently on this region and its politics and culture. Is this essentially the next major disturbing development in big rivalry between Iran and Saudi Arabia, or is it more about internal Saudi royal tensions? Either way, it matters. Mr. Bokhari is a senior analyst at the US-based firm Geopolitical Futures. He's also Director of Political Affairs at the Center for Global Policy and a fellow at George Washington University Center for Cyber and Homeland Security. Cameron Bokhari, welcome to Saturday Extra.
Thank you for having me, Geraldine.
Look, this is the definition, you say, of your in your writing, of palace intrigue. What are the key events as you see them?
There are two dynamics taking place simultaneously for the Saudis. On one hand, the entire region around them is in turmoil. Its main rival, Iran, is ascendant, given its net strategic position. And the same time, with all these external threats and challenges, the Saudis are at war with themselves. In terms of the power grab by the current king and his son, which is unprecedented. And then, of course, the arrests of by the crown prince of his many cousins, whom he deems as a threat. So this is exactly the kind of situation that we expect to see when any actor is pressed both at home and abroad.
Now, your own boss, George Friedman, whom we've had on the program, he, the way he saw it, and I wondered, this was came down late yesterday, was that in fact he described, for instance, the famous allowance of women to drive, which caused a lot of headlines earlier this year. He saw that as an attempt to flush out the power of the Wahhabi clerics, that really what he sees, and you alluded to this too, that there's been a decision by people in Saudi Arabia, some people, that they have to curb the power of the Wahhabi clerics, who are, you know, essentially deeply conservative people, and that Saudi Arabia has to emerge into a new era, and that those decisions flushed possibly a coup, which he then decided to get in advance of and to make all these arrests. Now, do you see it like that?
Yes. I mean, we have very few details as to what is happening. So there's a lot of analysis. There's a lot of speculation as well. It may very well be the case that his opponents were plotting, if you will, a coup, if you want to call it, or an attempt to block his ascension to the throne. And so I think that he struck first, the crown prince. Mm. And
this is MBS, Mohammed bin Salman.
Yes, this is the son of the
32-year-old, and they've all been sort of 81 prior to now, 79 and 80.
Yes, yes. And so, I mean, he appears to have outmaneuvered them, and if you look at the number, some of the key people arrested. So, for example, the head of the Saudi National Guard, Prince Mithab bin Abdullah, who is the son of the previous King Abdullah, who reigned for almost 20 years. There is Muhammad bin Naif, the former interior minister, former crown prince, who was removed from his position so as to make way for Mohammed bin Salman to become crown prince. He is head of internal security. Then you have Prince Al-Walid bin Talal, who is the globally renowned Saudi billionaire, and whose father has been very unhappy with the way King Salman took the throne and then has been cleaning house.
Yes.
And so he has, the young crown prince has skillfully taken out all those who could have, you know, been on the top of the list in terms of being able to pose a threat
and
to
is
his
there,
future as a king.
Well, is there an important ancillary question? Is that a for now quote, question mark? I mean, is this going to work?
Well, that is the big thing. You know, the key question is this just the beginning? Is this round one? Are there other rounds that are going to take place? I suspect that at this point in time, the key stakeholders or the key factions within the Saudi royal family do not want to create instability in the kingdom at a very precarious time. I mean, the economy is not doing well because of the price of oil being depressed, and it will remain that way for at least the medium term. So I think that right now, most people are saying, okay, we will not make a big deal out of this, and we will go along, we will keep quiet in the interest of stability in the kingdom. Now, let's say that despite all these shenanigans and all these maneuvering and plotting, the situation within the kingdom deteriorates, and Prince Mohammed bin Salman appears as weak and unable to secure the national interest of the kingdom. When that happens, we will see greater dissent. For now, the fear is, if we do anything, does this country turn into a Libya? Does this country turn into a Yemen or a Syria? And nobody wants to go down that route. But if it's going to happen anyway, then I don't see people staying quiet. Then I see unrest unfolding, both, in terms of the public and, of course, from within the influential circles, the political elite.
Okay. And what about, for instance, the U.S.-Saudi relationship? It is reported that Jared Kushner, Donald Trump's son-in-law, was there last week. I think it was last week or the week before, having long talks with the Crown Prince. And of course, the first overseas visit that Donald Trump made was to Saudi Arabia. Now, Edward Luce, the writer, has sort of said this is the quintessence of Trumpian diplomacy. Its flowering symbolizes the decay in the US-led global order. How do you see it?
I think that the US is limited in terms of its options. There is no way for the United States to, if you will, maintain stability from a distance. It's the case with any country trying to influence the events in another country, is that you need to have local partners inside that country. Now, in this case, Mohammed bin Salman and his father and their allies are key associates or key partners of the Trump administration. Nonetheless, if the people inside, I mean, Mohammed bin Salman, his father, the king, and their entire faction is unable to keep it together, there's not a whole lot that Jared Kushner could do, much less President Trump. And so I think that they are dependent upon Mohammed bin Salman maintaining order in the kingdom.
Okay. And I'll move on to the other then, the whole question of the interaction with Lebanon, which is what has been ramping up with these claims by Hassan Nasrallah, the Hezbollah, the very powerful Hezbollah man from Lebanon, saying there's effectively a war on because they can't seem to find their prime minister, Saad Hariri. Now, is that a proxy for the Iran-Saudi rivalry?
Absolutely. I mean, there's no question about it. I mean, look, for many years, Iran, has been improving its position, its strategic position in the region, while at the same time, the Saudi position has been weakening. This is not lost on the Saudis. They're under no illusions of grandeur. I think that they know very well where they stand. In Iraq, Iran and its allies are ascendant, especially after the degradation of ISIS and the liberation of Mosul. Likewise, the same thing happening in neighboring Syria. And meanwhile, the Saudis are stuck with a major fire in their backyard called Yemen. So, and even there, it seems that the Iranians are able to shape events in the sense of providing weapons to the opponents of the Saudis. For the Saudis, it's kind of like they're surrounded. And Lebanon was the one place that where they could hit back. And I think that what they're trying to do here is to undermine the government in Lebanon.
Because they actually put a lot of money into Saad Hariri, didn't they? That they were sort of quite a supporter of Saad Hariri in a range of ways, and they seem to have withdrawn that support.
Yes, I mean, Saad al-Hariri is their proxy.
Mm.
It's very well known. His father was their proxy as well. But the thing is that this is an attempt to force Hezbollah and Iran to redirect their energies in order to gain some respite. I mean, it's a very weak hand. It's not a very powerful move on the part of the Saudis. But it is what they can do at this time. They have no other cards in this game.
Look, I just have to... a very interesting remark made by one writer I read, that we've got to remember that this in some ways dates back to the 1979 takeover of the Grand Mosque in Mecca by a Wahhabi extremist, an event, this is Rula Khalaf writing, that it so terrified the royal family in Saudi Arabia that it ceded considerable social power to the clerics, the Wahhabis, and that in those days you would see women in sleeveless dresses dining with men right in the middle of Riyadh, which would be unthinkable today. So do you agree that things have turned very fast, and sometimes it's worthwhile remembering if there was a tipping point so that you can just put it in some context?
I think that it was way before 1979. I mean, this has been the dilemma of the modern kingdom since its inception. The grandfather of the crown prince who founded the modern kingdom, King Abdulaziz, the father of the current king, when his shock troops, known as the Ikhwan, conquered most of the territory of the Arabian Peninsula that we now today call Saudi Arabia. And then they wanted to continue to conquer more land, pushing into Jordan, pushing into Iraq, into Yemen. But those were British-controlled areas. And so Abdulaziz was, if you will, cooperating and coordinating his moves with the British, and therefore he could not push into those areas. And his own people, his own militia that conquered most of the territory for him, turned against him, and because they were religious hardliners. So right from the inception of this state, there has been this playing with fire, if you will, on the part of the Saudi royal family, where they deploy religious zealots as their shock troops, and you know, they have relied on the religious establishment, the ultra-conservative religious establishment, for their own well-being. Okay. And that comes with a price.
All right then, Cameron. It's in a watch this space. Thank you very much for joining us.
Take care. Cheers.
And just apologies for that rather awful Skype line. And that reference to Prince Alawad bin Talal, of course, and it's had a huge impact on Rupert Murdoch's empire, which we're going to hope to talk about next week with Stephen Mayne, who this big annual general meeting for the Murdoch Empire next week, and lots of things underway. Cameron Bockery, Senior Analyst at Geopolitical Futures.